guitar up.
One,
turn
two,
that guitar
three.
Up.
I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, it's the anniversary of Cosmos Factory, the Creedence Clearwater Revival album, which contained an unbelievable 6 top 5 hits.
Somewhere around the age of 18 or 19, at when my songwriting really started to get better, I get more better. And then I became famous with Creedence Clearwater, and my guitar chops kind of just froze right where they were. I really, you know, I was rock and roll good, but I wasn't really, really good like I had promised myself. It's kind of like the old joke. I was 30 years old before I found out I had no talent, but it was too late. I was already famous.
And I wonder, still I wonder, who'll stop the rain?
You know, I mean, this comes from God, obviously. I won't get too heavy on you here. But, I mean, we're all here to work it out, I guess, you know. And I'm supposed to be a musician, but this was a privilege. This was something that was given to me. It was nothing I earned or deserved.
In the year 1969, 3 colossal feats previously deemed impossible were accomplished by dedicated teams of Americans. First, the U.S. space program put men on the moon. The New York Mets went from worst to first, then won the World Series. And the Berkeley, California-based band Creedence Clearwater Revival recorded and released 3 hit albums in a single year. This was done despite the fact that Creedence didn't come from the music meccas of London, New York City, Motown, Memphis, or L.A. They were the antithesis of the famous psychedelic San Francisco music scene. CCR wasn't even on a major label. It's a little-known fact that Creedence Clearwater Revival performed at the legendary Woodstock Festival in the summer of 69, yet they were denied the iconic status that the others received from the Woodstock album and movie when they were excluded from both. Most importantly, Creedence Clearwater Revival didn't sound like anybody else then, nor since, really. Those 3 CCR albums in 1969, Bayou Country, Green River, and Willie and the Poor Boys, were all written and produced by Creedence singer-guitarist John Fogerty. After that Olympian output, you'd assume that Fogerty, his older brother, rhythm guitarist Tom, bass player Stu Cook, and drummer Doug Clifford would be creatively spent. But in July 1970, Creedence Clearwater Revival released another album, Cosmos Factory, a timeless treasure filled with what have become modern standards. Number 262 on Rolling Stone magazine's top 500 albums all time. In front of a studio audience, I asked John Fogerty about his music.
Your prolific Creedence body of work had a heavy, rural, and distinctly southern flavor. Vivid images of swamps and bayous and hoodoo. Where were you and your brothers, Tom and Bob, raised?
We grew up in the Bay Area of California. In other words, across the bay from San Francisco. We used to play in the El Cerrito swamps all the time. Yeah, there are no swamps there, or delta. Or actually, there's a Sacramento delta, but it's not that delta.
So in summer vacations, did you ever do the cabin in the woods and the whole thing with the family?
Well, actually, yeah, the song Green River is drawn from my childhood. That's from a cabin up on the Puta Creek up by Winters, California, that my parents used to take. Wow, they're dropping like flies. This is a long story.
The entire audience.
Wow, this is just like Woodstock.
This
is when they sent me out. We followed the Grateful Dead, and oh my God, 500,000 people asleep. Oh, geez. Anyway, zing, pow! Oh, sorry. Yeah, we used to go up to this cabin, as you said, on the Puta Creek, outside of Winters, California. It's up in Northern California. And the cabin, the story I got, remember, I was like 4 or 5 years old. This old guy who was like 75, we called him Cody. or sometimes they call him Old Grandpa Cody, and he was reputed to be a direct descendant of Buffalo Bill. Hence, in the song Green River, I called him Old Cody Jr. And Green River, like all the songs that I wrote for Creedence, are drawn on my own childhood or life experiences. In other words, what you've been hearing all these years really is my life.
That's the Creedence Clearwater Rave-Up Travelin' Band from 1970's Cosmos Factory album. Travelin' Band went to number two as a single, Creedence's fifth consecutive million seller. Even as a mere boy, John Fogerty had musical aspirations.
When I was younger, I was just sort of walking around the house singing and going doo-wop. And in fact, I named my first imaginary group Johnny Corvette and the Corvettes.
Ooh, I like that.
Guess who Johnny was? Yeah. Well, this was 1953. I was about 8 years old, and that was the first year of the Corvette, which was and is an awesome American sports car. in fact, I have one of those now.
What year?
Mine's an 87. I finally got one. I waited all those years,
Just got home from Illinois. Locked the front door open. Listening to Buck Owens, do-do-do, looking out my back door. Tambourines and elephants are playing in the band. Won't you take a ride on the flying spoon? Do-do-do, one less apparition provided by magician. Do-do-do, looking out my back door. We'll be right back.
From 1970s Creedence classic Cosmos Factory, that's the delightful Looking Out My Back Door, which peaked at number 2 and made it 7 million sellers in a row for Creedence Clearwater Revival and John Fogerty, who even as an adolescent had guitar heroes.
Well, I took a look at people like Chet Atkins, Duane Eddy, James Burton, who was playing then with... actually, the first thing he did I loved, but I didn't know it was him. It was on a record called Susie Q by Dale Hawkins.
Uh-huh.
I only found out years later that was James. I'm, oh, my goodness. I mean, he was like 15 years old at the time.
Really?
And bending strings all over the place even then. I guess a little bit later, people like Roy Nichols, who played with Merle Haggard, Don Rich with Buck Owens. You know, these were guys who were really... great on the guitar, really great guitar players. And when I was about 14, I had decided in my mind that I wanted to grow up and be like that. By the time I was 14, I realized I wanted to be a guitar player and a good one. And the guys I have mentioned, especially Chet and James Burton, were like masters of the field they were in. You know, Chet wasn't much rock and roll, but he was eloquent, just, you know, great stuff. And James was just smoking rock and roll stuff, and a little bit later, the country and all that string bending. And I wanted to be like that. That's what I promised myself that I would become. Unfortunately, then, somewhere around the age of 18 or 19, when my songwriting really started to get better, I became famous with Creedence Clearwater, and my guitar chops kind of just froze right where they were. You know, I was rock and roll good, but I wasn't really, really good like I had promised myself. It's kind of like the old joke, I was 30 years old before I found out I had no talent, but it was too late, I was already famous. Yeah, I was kind of frozen in, you know, what I was doing with Creedence, which was nice, hummable stuff. You know, my guitar playing, you could always hum the leads. It was never any knock 'em dead kind of stuff like James Burton. It was just, you know, it's good. I mean, there's times when you ought to just shut up and play nicely. But I wanted to be that other guy, too. And it's only been the last few years that I've started to just... get into the footsteps, let's say, of a James Burton. Of course, I'm getting where he was 30 years ago, so I have a long way to go.
Down the road I go.
Workout by Creedence Clearwater Revival on Ramble Tamble from the Cosmos Factory album. Up next, we'll try to unravel the mystery of how a young man from Northern California could write so often, so well, about the swamps and bayous and culture of the South without ever having set foot there. Welcome back to In the Studio for the anniversary of Creedence Clearwater Revival's Cosmos Factory. I'm Redbeard. Against the backdrop of the Vietnam War, the civil rights and anti-war movements, lunar landings, assassinations of leaders, and a rapidly changing North America, John Fogerty wrote, sang, played, and produced Creedence Clearwater Revival into the fabric of rock and roll's colorful patchwork quilt.
John, with all seriousness, with the possible exception of Robbie Robertson, who's Canadian, no one in contemporary music has written so often, so well, about rural Southern culture. So how did your outsider's perspective, like Robertson's, help you see the cross-cultural uniqueness of the South?
To say it simply, it's not something I think about, other than, you know, it's been pointed out to me a lot that I'm Southern a lot, and of course I didn't grow up in the South. And all I can say is that rock and roll itself was very, very Southern in its beginnings. And, you know, I've gone most years to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ceremony and induction and all that. And the very first year was a class of 10, and of course, including Elvis and Fats Domino and Jerry Lee and some others. Well, 10 people, actually. Some were alive, you know, and some were on poster. And I stood there, and as I counted, I knew that 9 of them were from the South. The only guy I wasn't sure about was Sam Cooke, and I learned later that he was indeed from the South. And I rest my case. I mean, I stood there in 1986 looking at that class, the first class, the first really major people from rock and roll, and that was what was in my mind. I said, you know, this is a pretty Southern thing here.
Hey, baby, jump over here when you do the ooby-dooby.
Creedence Clearwater Revival, a 1970s Cosmos Factory album covering Roy Orbison from when Roy recorded on the venerated Memphis Sun label.
Rock and roll is just a Southern thing. I started paying attention to that in the very beginning. And I think later that spilled over into the other things in my life, especially entertainment things, meaning that since music was so important to me and this stuff was the most important, I would hang on to movies like, let's say, Tennessee Williams stuff, or remember that old movie, The Defiant Ones, Tony Curtis and Sidney? I don't know where it occurred, but I'm sure it was the South, if they had a chain gang and all that, you know.
To Kill a Mockingbird?
I was just real intrigued with those kind of things, but I didn't sit around and really exclude it from other parts of life or notice it in a more, I didn't know I was noticing it specially. I just thought that was normal. That's what I, you know, paid attention to. It's only now, many years after Proud Mary, let's say, that people sort of point out that it's a little odd that you'd never been to the Mississippi River, but you wrote about it.
The fact that this area, geographically, is not that big a place, is it?
Oh, no, especially if you go down to the Mississippi Delta. Because I read The Day Christ Died, I think, by James Bishop, probably when I was in the 10th grade or something. Which, of course, is about the Holy Land, too. And on the first page, he points out that the Holy Land is a very small place. I think you could walk it in a few days. I noticed a similarity about the Delta, that it was really a tiny area of the world to be so important in our American culture and therefore all over the world.
Top 5 hit in both the U.S. and the U.K. That's Creedence Clearwater Revival with Up Around the Bend from the album Cosmos Factory. The album stood atop the charts for 9 weeks, helping to extend CCR's hitting streak of 9 top 10 hits in a row in only 4.5 years. 2 decades later, John Fogerty felt a strange yearning pulling him back to a distant place.
Well, I'm not sure you always know what's missing. You just know that something's missing. I had the vague feeling that that you talked about the 14-year-old boy promising himself to grow up and be a great musician, a guitar player specifically. I began to have more and more the sense that I was not. You know, unless I'm going to be reincarnated or in some other parapsychological way, get to come back here and get to come back as James Burton. It was time for me to get my act in gear, I guess. But I didn't know it all that clearly. I'm saying this now. At the time, this is about 1989, 88 even, I started having this longing or an urge to go to Mississippi, but I didn't have a clue why. I mean, it's the weirdest feeling when something is pushing you to go someplace. And, it, you know, we all have our own lives and busy lives, and we have commitments and that sort of thing. And it just seemed like too much trouble. Why do you want to go do that? So I kept putting off the feeling because it didn't make any sense to me. Later, I've used the kind of the picture of the guy in Close Encounters of the Third Kind where he's making the mashed potatoes on the table and it getting this high and he's going, boo-doo-doo, boo-doo. And he doesn't have a clue. And of course, everybody in the neighborhood thinks he is stone out of his mind. That's how I felt. Now, remember, I've never been in Mississippi. Even though I've written, you know, some of these Southern songs, as you say, I didn't even know where to go. I just felt like I had to go find the Delta because I'd heard about that all my life. But I, you know, think about it. If you've never been there, what do you put a backpack on your, you know, on your back and get on a bicycle and go somewhere? So I actually went to New Orleans the first time and went across the bridge of, across the Mississippi and came up from the southern Mississippi, which is really the wrong way to approach this for any of you that are contemplating such a trip. Anyhow,
water flows down, doesn't
it? It's
it?
More yes. better, yeah, to go, come from Memphis. This is, after a few trips, I finally figured out this is why Memphis plays such a big part in the Mississippi blues syndrome and in American rock and roll and blues, too. It's because that's really the first big city that you hit coming north from out of Mississippi. It's where everybody would stop, and some, of course, stayed there.
Ostensibly the B-side of the Up Around the Bend single, many of us noticed a distinctively sober, haunted social awareness in the lyrics of the anti-Vietnam War song Run Through the Jungle. For more interviews from your favorite rock stars and exclusive live performances by John Fogerty, visit inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. Still to come, John Fogerty continues in the studio. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter at Redbeard Rocks, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard with John Fogerty in the studio of Rolling Stone magazine's number 265 album of all time, Cosmos Factory by Creedence Clearwater Revival. Welcome back to In the Studio. For the 45th anniversary of Creedence Clearwater Revival's Cosmos Factory, I'm Redbeard. More than 20 years after, Creedence Clearwater Revival's John Fogerty felt restless, drawn back to a place he'd never been.
So I took the first trip, kind of meandered and didn't know where I was, why I was there, and ended up in Hattiesburg. And that was really not really the Delta. And it was, you know, 4 or 5 days had passed. So I finally, you know, my wife was waiting for me at home. So I came home. But I vowed to go back and kind of get it right the next time. I ended up doing 5 or 6 trips, something like that. And I got pretty good at it after a while. I had this whole, you know, a couple of knapsacks or suitcases.
Carpet bag.
Well, whatever. No, please. I wasn't selling no insurance.
Okay.
And, I, you know, notebooks and tape recorders and finally records and cassettes that I could play in the rent a car and eventually a camera. I took hundreds of pictures, and I'm not in a one of them, you know. I've got a lot of pictures of snakes and turtles crossing the road and water towers with every little town's name on them. You know, I mean, it's great stuff to me. I've made several albums. Muddy Waters House when it was still there. And, I mean, it was invaluable to me.
One of the greatest compositions of the last 50 years. That's another John Fogerty song reflecting America's convulsions over the escalating war in Vietnam that summer of 1970. That's Who'll Stop the Rain from Creedence Clearwater Revival's album Cosmos Factory. Fogerty's swamp rock tales went from blues to barbecue, blue moons, and bayous. But notably, John Fogerty never engaged the most common pop music subject of all. Love.
Well, of course I should, yeah. Except I've never written a love song. Everybody knows that. And now the reason is because it's what you said. Most of the songs, the vast majority of songs in the world, in all cultures, are love songs. And to me, that becomes kind of trivial. I hate to say it that way, but you can, you know, put on the radio. I mean, any guy, I'll tell you this. Oh, my God, another sappy love song. You know, it's like, there's so many, and they just seem to be rhyming words. I did not get the connection from most love songs.
Now, I noticed you just said one of those moments that you feel privileged. You didn't say lucky. You said privileged to be a musician. Can you expand on that just a tad?
Well, when it works, you know. I mean, this comes from God, obviously. I won't get too heavy on you here. I mean, we're all here to work it out, I guess, you know. And I'm supposed to be a musician, but this was a privilege. This was something that was given to me. It was nothing I earned or deserved. It just was sort of laid on me.
Yes.
Whether you're Gladys Knight and the Pips, the great Marvin Gaye, or Creedence Clearwater Revival in this case on Cosmos Factory, you can't help but sound great on Norman Whitfield and Barrett Strong's I Heard It Through the Grapevine. The incredible success of Cosmos Factory helped elect Creedence Clearwater Revival into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame on the first ballot. And 27 years after hitting the number one slot with Cosmos Factory, John Fogerty would release the solo album Blue Moon Swamp and win the Grammy Award for Best Rock Album that year. I'm Redbeard. We'll be back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guest John Fogerty. In the Studio was written and produced by yours truly for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2015, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brune. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter, at Redbeard Rocks, and online at inthestudio.net.